We're talking today with the Dean of the Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Oklahoma State University, Dean Tom Kuhn. Dr. Kuhn, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are, you know, you're looking at, considering, trying to put into place to stretch the budget dollars that you have and do, you know, I guess put the priority on how you want to serve the state of Oklahoma through Extension and the other parts of DASNR.
You bet. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Ron. And, you know, part of it is we've just got to be as focused as we could be. We really have to narrow down the kind of things that we're working on, the different topics, the different crops, and so on. And I hate to say that, but that's the reality. I think the other thing is, and I really see this as an opportunity for us to get even better, and that is to look at how can we use technology to drive information out that people are looking for. Because, you know, the days of going to the county extension office to get information, that doesn't happen nearly as much. Folks are a lot more likely to get on Google and ask a question there or send a text or an email or follow one of our specialists or educators on Twitter. So, you know, a lot of it is providing support for our staff and our faculty so that they're comfortable using those tools to drive information out.
What's the extension structure, especially as you get out to the area and to the counties? What's it going to look like in the days to come?
Well, we're going to do everything we can to make sure we've got an office in every county. And the reason for that is our 4-H program. We really feel we've got to have someone in the county that we can call upon who's going to be the shepherd of the program, if you will, recruiting adult volunteers, training those volunteers, doing the background checks and all that kind of thing. So we need to have the county office. But on the other program areas, in our nutrition areas and in agriculture and natural resource areas, I think we've got to figure out how to deliver with what I would say is a more specialized role for educators covering a broader area. So the day of a general ag educator is a day that's leaving us, I think. Now, there are some counties where the county feels committed to that and they have the resources to pay for that. That's fine. We'll always work with them on that. But as far as our own resources that we have from the state and federal appropriations that we receive, I feel like we really need to target those and have educators who are going to focus on just one area, maybe one crop, or say just focus on cow-calf operations, whatever it is, but covering a broad area so that they have a close relationship with our specialists on campus and our area specialists and can be a vehicle for getting information out and can be a contact point for the producer who's looking for that information.
So would that be different than a true area or district specialist, a district agronomist or livestock specialist?
Yes, I think so, because what it allowed us to do is to have that person carrying a smaller area than our area specialist does. They're going to work with the area specialist, and so we... You know, a lot of what we need to be doing is working on our team skills. How do we hand off responsibility and information and work together to get information out? But I think that more specialized focus, in a way, it's taking that area specialist role, and if you think about it that way, and giving that person a little bit smaller area to cover than the area specialist does.
Does that kind of imply, you know, as you try to use technology, are you looking at things like, you know, webinars, video, you know, these type of things?
You bet. It's all of the above. So podcasts, webinars. The beauty of the webinar technology is you can advertise it, say we're going to do this from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday evening and record it. And if someone participates, they can join in to the live and ask questions. Maybe that time doesn't work for them. It's going to be recorded. They can go back and listen to it later. Not only that, they can fast forward and get to the parts where they have the greatest interest. So, you know, webinars, but a lot of it is taking the information we already have. Our fact sheets are our strongest set of data, if you will, of content that we have. More than 5,000 fact sheets that we have in our system, and we update those. We don't have 1940s information there. That's current information. And so you think about it, those are pretty detailed, pretty dense, and for some people that's what they want. How do we take that and condense it down to 100, 150 words, put it on a website or send it out in a blog or send it out in a social media post of some kind and get information out that way? The other thing is video. you know, we are much more motivated now to follow something if it's on video than having to read through it. I guess maybe we're getting lazy, whatever. But and so that's another area where we're really trying to build our staff's capacity, is for them to be able to put together a short video. People don't want to watch 50 minutes of video. They want to see in 3 minutes or less whatever it is you're talking about. And so, of course, we already have that with SUNUP. All of those segments are available on YouTube now, broken out by segment. But to go even further with that and have really condensed little bits of information that illustrate what we're talking about, and people can find that on their own or be directed there from our social media posts and learn from that. So it's all of the above.
Stepping back from the extension of the transmission of information to the general public, the extension kind of goes, of course, hand-in-hand with the other two parts of the triangle.
You bet.
On research.
Yeah.
I know that's something that takes a lot of dollars to make it, you know, really good.
It does. And without that, we don't have extension, and we don't have a modern academic program in our departments. We've got to have that foundation of new knowledge, advancing our understanding of how these agricultural systems work, how nutrition works, consumer behavior, all of that. So we've got to keep that going. And it is a challenging time. At the same time, we've got some excellent scientists, and they are becoming more and more successful at competing for grants from federal agencies, what have you, or with industry support to keep their research programs growing. So, you know, one of the things that I think we think about, well, how do we do the land grant mission today with less and less support from the public? And part of the answer is we have to figure out how to bring resources to the table in other ways. And so those grants are a good example of that. Certainly philanthropy has been important. Sponsorship and collaboration with industry, that's always a dicey situation because we've got to have our independence. When we're pursuing a line of research, we've got to take it to wherever it leads us, even if it isn't in the interest of a potential sponsor. So, you know, that's one of those areas where the public interest still is greater, more better served by us having public funding to support that research program.
You know, when you talk to some of your peers and other land grants around the country, I know that we've heard various stories of similar type issues, ways to try to, you know, do more with less. You know, what are you picking up from some of your colleagues around the country, you know, that may work here?
Well, I think some of these innovations in how we use technology, there are lots of experiments going on around the country, and so we really try to follow that as well as we can. And if anything, I need more help of staff who are specialized in people learning how to use those new techniques. But the other thing is collaboration. And so we've seen this, you know, some of our most successful grant efforts in the last 5 years have been collaborations across state lines. We got Texas A&M, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Colorado State working together on some of these projects that really do address issues in the Southern Plains. So that's one of them. And then with respect to extension, you know, well, both research and extension, if we've got an emphasis and another state doesn't have that, we've got to be willing to share what we have with them and vice versa, whatever expertise they have with us and so on. You already see that with the genetics, you know, the wheat genetics and so on, that, you know, we're collaborating with Texas A&M, we're collaborating with Kansas State in those ways. But in a lot of the other extension programs, for example, Kansas State has a really strong program in farm management. We've got an excellent farm management program. But on the financials, I think we could benefit from collaborating with them more in their system, and they're open to that. Yeah. So, you know, part of it is states are, in a way, the state boundary is a pretty fuzzy line, and we've got to be willing to walk across that line and collaborate in order to do the best we can for Oklahoma.
Budget doesn't look great this year, obviously, at the state level. You got to pretty well assume, and I would think plan, that 18 and maybe even 19 won't be much better. What does that mean to OSU and especially the Division of Ag?
It really slows us down in being responsive to whatever is emerging, whatever the emerging needs are. You know, we're so fortunate with this sugarcane aphid situation in the Milo fields. You know, we've got some top-notch entomologists who are working on that. We've had them for a long time. If one of those people were to retire, I'm not in a position to be able to fill that spot. And so we're lucky in that respect. I've lost some others on the livestock side I've not been able to replace. And so it really hampers us in the long run. The other thing that this is just sort of, the peculiarities of how our division is funded, but we may lose someone who's got 70% of their work is research in some particular area, but the other 30% they're teaching classes. Well, we've got the money on the academic side, but we've lost the money on the research side because we don't get the benefit of tuition for our research side. So we've lost that expertise because we can't afford to hire back on the research side, but we've also lost the expertise on the teaching side. So those are some of the dilemmas that we're dealing with. I'm not crying over it. It's a challenge. And like I said, any challenge, you've got to look at it as an opportunity to get better, and that's what we're doing. So, you know, in our animal science department, the faculty have come up with one of the things we're most known for is the care that we take in advising our students, their academic advising. It is by our faculty. In animal science, we are eating people alive because there's so many students in that major. It's a wonderful thing, but we've got to be smarter than that and think about where we need tenured professors working is in advancing that research and teaching the classes, and we can bring other people in who are well versed in animal science to do some of the advising. And so that's a compromise that we've made. I think it'll make us better, because I think the first 2 years those students are going to get advising from someone who is on top of that, any change that comes up and so on. Their junior and senior year, they'll be getting faculty advising. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. So that's what I mean by using this as an opportunity to get better. It's not enough just to say, well, we'll cut back and we'll cut back and we'll cut back. We got to get better.